Morning, everyone. Today's daf and Yuma, daf Lamaches. Lamaches and Medbez. We're finishing up a little bit of a gadot of the Gemara. Got into the discussion of Eila Legnai Eila Leshvach. A number of improvements and a number of things that were done for the Beis Hamikdash that were not, which were improvements, but whatever, not favored upon. So basically, if you want to see the Dapim, you basically have Daf Lamed Zayin, Daf Lamed Ches. Meaning Daf Lamed Zayin, if you go back to the Mishnah, Daf Lamed Zayin, so the Mishnah mentioned a number of people that were involved with the Bayis Sheni, with the Second Temple, and made upgrades to the Beis HaMikdash, adding spouts to the Kiyor, making gold for the handles of knives, and an assortment of other improvements that were made in the Beis HaMikdash. And the conclusion of the Mishnah on Daf Lamed Zayin is Vayumas Kirnos El Shvach. Anytime you mention any one of these people and any one of the improvements, so Shvach, in other words, that was an upgrade. That was a, and let's praise them. And then you have a Mishnah on Lamed Ches, which is yesterday's Daf, and the Mishnah says, Ve'el L'Gnai. And these are the people who really should be censored, meaning they were not doing things that were favorable. And we pointed to whom? So we pointed to a number of families. The Mishnah pointed to the family of Beis Aftinas. So let me go in the order of the Mishnah. First, the Mishnah pointed to the family of Beis Garmu. Beis Garmu, so they knew how to make the lechem upon him where it held its shape. And the Mishnah says the problem was is that they want to share that information with others. Meaning they had certain secrets, baking secrets, that they kept to themselves. They didn't share with anyone else. And to that, the Mishnah says they're censored. Then there's the family of Beis Aftinas. Beis Aftinas knew how to burn the Ketores so that when the Ketores burned, it produced a smoke that went up like a column and didn't disperse. They had a secret. They had a secret ingredient that they added to the Ketores in order for this to happen. And again, they didn't share that information with others. The Gemara yesterday, just as a quick review, the Gemara yesterday mentioned how the Chachamim tried to outsource, meaning the Chachamim, they were asked to share the secrets, these families. The families refused to share the secrets with others. They had what they felt was proper motivation and proper reasons to do so. But the Chachamim, but they wouldn't share it. The Chachamim said, fine, you're not sharing, fine, you're done. They tried to outsource their jobs. They went down to Egypt. They imported workers from Egypt to outsource their jobs. They did a good job, but not as good. They went back to these families, gave them a raise, doubled their salary, and then they continued doing the work. And then so there existed, as we pointed out yesterday, that kind of ambiguous tension where the Chachamim needed them, but didn't like them, and basically capitulated to their desire of getting paid more. But again, let's not go over yesterday's daf in total. But whether or not they were sincere in their motivation or not sincere, so go back to yesterday's daf, because yesterday's daf basically offered us a lot of ambiguity in terms of whether or not they were not sincere. The other. Was it known? The general ingredients, yes, but they added things. What was called mala ashan? It was they added to it. So is that an essential component? Apparently not, because other people didn't. But all right.
What these fellows, they didn't initiate the problem in terms of asking for more money.
Yeah, the money issue is an interesting issue because they didn't ask for it. Meaning,
they didn't initiate the problem.
No. The way the story is told to us through the Gemara, they didn't ask for the money. But the Chachamim basically, after trying to outsource, the Chachamim had to lure him back and then lure him back with more money. So again, I'm gonna reserve any judgment because the Gemara itself is ambiguous in terms of what kind of light should be cast upon them. Hugras ben Levi, so he had an unbelievable way of playing an instrument. He played his fingers together with the whiskers of his mustache. And don't ask me, I can't help you. But in other words, and the Gemara says, and again, he wouldn't share that with anyone. And then finally, the last one mentioned in the Mishnah was Ben Kamtsar. Ben Kamtsar knew how to write using his hand and four pencils or pencils, write four quills. And he would write Shem Hashem at one time. We explained yesterday the reason why he did that is to give more cover to Shem Hashem. In other words, when we write Shem Hashem, so we start off with the letter Yud, so that's not Shem Hashem, meaning that's a portion of Shem Hashem. And it, obviously, three more letters away, we're going to finish Shem Hashem, but it's a little bit of a diminishment. By writing Shem Hashem with all four letters at the same time, so the Gemara says that's a That's it's a hiddur. It's a way of, but he refused to share that skill with anybody. Meaning, apparently, I don't know. I don't know what secrets there were, but there was a skill involved. He refused to share that skill with anyone. And the Mishnah to that says Shemer Sham Yirkav. Meaning, when we mention their name, so their name should accumulate rot. Okay, the Mishnah, I should say, was very clear in terms of its disapproval of these families for having talent, but not sharing talent with others. Okay. We're on Lamed Ches Amud Beis. We are somewhere in the middle of the Amud. Find my way there when we get there in just a moment. And today's daf is Daf Lamed Tes. So over the course of today, God willing, we're going to finish the third parak of Yuma and begin the fourth parak. Okay, we're towards the top. Okay, let's start towards the top. This will make it easy. That way, I'll know we'll have covered everything. Okay, Hooper's Ben Levi. I'm going to start three lines from the very top of the Amud on Lamed Ches Amud Beis. Tanya Kishu Nosin Kol B'Ni'ima Machnis Golo L'Toch Piv. Okay, the Gemara over here describes, the Braisa describes the singing that was done, the instrument that he played, which was his fingers and the whiskers of his hair, Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara quotes another Braisa, Ben Kamsa Lorotza Lamed Amaisak Sav, Amar Olav Shayinot Tal Dal Kumosim, Ben Otzmo Sav. He held four of the quills in his fingers, v'im ha'isa teva shel dalos. Yes, and if it was a word that was four letters long, hayakosvan bebas achas, he would write it at the same time. Amar lo marita shalame kulan. I'm sorry, shalala lamed. So they asked him. So please share. So kulan matzu tshuva ledivrim. So everyone had an excuse. I don't mean excuse in a bad way, but everyone had an explanation. But Ben Kamsar lo matzu tshuva ledvarav. But Ben Kamsar literally had nothing to say, had no justification for why he wouldn't share that with others. Now, what's the difference between him and the others? So Rashi points out, because the others, what did the others do? Baking bread, ketores, meaning that they were able to produce things which could be used for avodah zarah. The ketores could be burned for avodah zarah, bread could be baked for avodah zarah, meaning all the other ones were afraid that it's going to get into the wrong hands. What was Ben Kamsar's skill? He was able to write. Now, I mean, I guess if you're, you know, if you're creative enough, you could think of a reason why it's going to be used for avodah zarah, but probably not. Meaning, writing for avodah zarah, that wasn't a method of worshiping avodah zarah. So he really didn't have an excuse. It's not going to get into the wrong hands. So the Gemara says that. On the other ones who explained and justified and said, look, we don't want to give our skills over to avodah zarah. Fine. They had an explanation. They had a justification. So for that, we'll say it's zecher tzadik levracha. But when it comes to Ben Kamsar, who literally had no explanation why he wouldn't share the skill with others, shemer sham yirkav. My v'shemer sham yirkav, amir Rabbi Lazar, rak vivios ta'aleh b'shmosam. Rust should go over their name. Meaning their name should go into such disuse. Just like metal that's not used you're gonna have rust grow on it. Their name should have rust grow on it. Nobody should name any of our children with their names. The Gemara spells it out. Don't name your children after them. So the Gemara says, fine. So you have a Rasha, so don't name your child after a Rasha. So the Gemara says, okay, but happens to be that we have a doeg running around. Right? Doeg. Right? Well, doeg had domi. Not a good character in Tanakh. And meanwhile, the Gemara notes that somewhere in the time of the Amorayim, there was a child by the name of Doeg. Doeg ben Yosef, she knew Chavim ben Katav Limo. By the way, not during the time of the Amorayim. Okay? I'm sorry. Let me put him in the correct historical context. He was in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Maisa ben Doeg ben Yosef, she knew Chavim ben Katav Limo. And he was abandoned by his father. And so his mother raised him. Bechol yom ha'isa imo modedaso b'tzfachim and osam mishkolos shel zahav lebeis hamikdash. Now, every day what mom would do, mom apparently had money, so what mom would do is weigh the child, and whatever the child weighed, so that amount she donated to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so as a way of both giving to the Beis HaMikdash and obviously, you know, valuing her son. And then when the Romans took rule, meaning when the Romans started sieging the city, Tavchaso v'achalso. So she slaughtered her son, she ate her son. V'alokon in Yirmiyahu. Now Yirmiyahu and Echa, Megillas Echa, already noted that this was going to happen. In Tochlan and Hashim Piryam, Ole Tapuchim. So the Navi, Yirmiyahu and Echa, says that this is going to happen, that mothers are going to end up eating their children. Now, if you go on in the Pasuk in Echa, so you'll see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives an explanation. It's because of the murder of a Kohen and a Navi that takes place in the base of Mikdash. So as a result of that, all the tragedies befell. Chazi. But the Gemara right now is just finished asking a question. What's the question of the Gemara? How could you have a kid going around with the name Doeg? Meaning Doeg is a name that was used in Sefer Shmuel. It reflected a Rasha. Nobody should be naming their name Doeg. And meanwhile, fast forward a short 800 years later, and at the end of the Second Temple, so you have a child by the name Doeg. So the Gemara says, how could that be? So Chazi Mai Salak Bey. So the Gemara says, it's obviously a very sharp line of the Gemara. Gemara says, yeah, but look what happened to him. Meaning, you're right, he shouldn't have been named Doeg, but meanwhile his name ended up being Doeg. The parents named him Doeg, and look what happened to him. I'm Rabbi Lazar Tzadik Me'atma V'Rasha Mechaveira. Rabbi Lazar says a line which at first is cryptic, it's a little bit of code, but the Gemara is going to explain a little bit better. Tzadik on his own, Russia from his friends. What does that mean? Tzadik Me'atma Dechsev Zecher Tzadik L'Vracha. Meaning when it comes to a tzadik, so he doesn't need assistance to be a tzadik. You could just be a tzadik on your own. Zecher Tzadik L'Vracha. You could exist as a tzaddik. Rasha mechaver dechsev v'shem rishayim yirkav. But meanwhile, when it comes to a rasha, so you get heaped in with the other rishayim. Meaning, even if you don't hang out with the other rishayim, but shem rishayim yirkav. Meaning, if you look at the pasuk, you'll note that there's a grammatical dissimilarity. Meaning, when it comes to the tzaddik, the Torah speaks in the Navi speaks in lashon yachid. When it talks about the rasha, it talks in lashon rabim. So, in other words, once you assign yourself as a rasha, you automatically are lumped together with the other rishayim. Amalei Ravina Lomer Rabbanan Davin Mesadar Garata Kamei Menaha Milsa Damer Rabbanan Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Give me a source. How do I know Zecher Tzadik Levracha? Give me a source. So Amalei, so he says, you want a source? Zecher Tzadik Levracha. That's a pasuk. You don't need a source. That's a pasuk of Mishlei. Amalei Daksev Zecher Tzadik Levracha. So he says, open up a Mishlei. You'll see the source. So Mido Araisa Menalan. So he says, no, I get it. It's a pasuk in Mishlei. In the Torah, can you show me in the Torah where we have this idea of Zecher Tzadik Levracha? So, Dechsiv Hashem Amar Mechasi Ani Ma'avra Masher Ani Oseh. So, by the destruction of Sodom, so Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, it's not right. Meaning, Avram's here, I should tell him. I should let him in on the discussion. And he mentions the name of Avraham. And then, Dechsiv Avram Ayah, Yeh, L'goy Gadol V'atzum. And then, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. Once you mention the name of a tzaddik, so therefore it requires a bracha. And that's the next pasuk of Avram Hayo Yiyel Goy Gadol. Menahem Ilse Damar Rabban Hashem Rishayim Yerkav. So give me a source in the Torah for the next part of the pasuk in Mishlei. Shem Rishayim Yerkav. Amalei Dahaksi V'Shem Rishayim Yerkav. Again, what do you mean? Give me a source. It's a pasuk in Mishlei. Mida Araisa Menalan. Gemara clarifies. No, we want a pasuk in Chumash that reflects this idea. So the Gemara says, "Fine, I'll give you an example. We'll stay in the same parsha. No, we'll go back to Lech Lecha. So, but anyway, Vayal Sodom, that he put up his tent right by the city of Sodom, and this is when Lot and Avram split up, and Sodom was Ra'im v'Chatim L'Hashem Ma'od." That shame rishayim yirkav. I'm Rav Lazar Tzadik Dar Ben Shnei Rishayim Velo Lama Mimasehem. A tzaddik can draw between two rishayim, and meanwhile he could still be a tzaddik. Rasha Dar Ben Shnei Tzadikim Velo Lama Mimasehem. But a rasha, just the opposite. Meaning, well, not just the opposite, but the same effect. Where a rasha, a true rasha, could live between tzaddikim and not be influenced by the tzaddikim. Tzaddik Dar Ben Shnei Rishayim Velo Lama Mimasehem Ovadja. So the Gemara says, I'll just give you an example. One example of a tzaddik living amongst bad people, that's Ovadja. Ovadia, one of the Treyasar, quote unquote, the minor prophets. The Ovadia lived during the time of Achav, Izevel. It was surrounded by Rishayim. And meanwhile, he's the Tzaddik. Rasha, not mentioned Tzaddik, Esav. That's the reference to Esav. And who are the two Tzaddikim that Esav lived amongst? Take a look at Rashi. I would have guessed wrong, which is a poor reflection on me. But the take a look at Rashi. Rashi says Yitzchak and Rivka. Those are the two tzaddikim. The Amar, right? Sorry, I'm just making sure I'm right. Shem Rishayim. That's right. Is that where's the Rashi? What happened?
The art school agrees with you.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's good. I'm oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was Rashi. Okay, now I'm incorrect about that. Okay. I was right about Avadja being Achav and Izevel, but okay. All right, anyway. Okay, fine. I would have said Yitzhak and Yaakov, and meanwhile, right, you could say, who does he quote? Let's give proper attribution. You know, he doesn't make things up. Okay. Whatever. We'll come back to that. So, Amar Rav Elazar may be chasam shel tzaddikim. Okay, may berchasam shel tzaddikim atalam miklal rishayim, or miklasam shel rishayim atalam berchal tzaddikim. So the Gemara says you can, from one perspective, you can see the other perspective. The Gemara says, let's see. May berchasam shel tzaddikim atalam miklal rishayim dechsev the kiyadatu v'aman asher yitzaveh uksev basrei v'yamar Hashem zakas sedom v'amar ki rabba. So when Kadosh Baruch Hu was speaking about Avram, he says, "Ki adat v'aman asher yitzaveh." I know how loyal he is. And then afterwards it says, "Zakat Sodom v'Amora ki rabba." Right, the cries of Amora are great. Sodom and Amora are great. Umeklasam shav rishayim. Meanwhile, cursing the rishayim, Allah Ta'ala made bracha letzadikim. You also could tease out of it a bracha for the tzadikim. Dechsiv, manshei Sodom ra'im v'chatim l'Hashem, v'Hashem amar l'Avram, acharei hi parei lo mi'imo. Meaning, after mentioning how bad Sodom is, he then turns his attention to Avram, who separated himself from Lot. Amar Rav Elazar, afilu bishvil tzadik echad olam nivra. World can be justified for its creation just for one tzadik. Shenemar vayar elokim esa or ki tov. Ein tov ela tzadik. Now, usually, tov comes in conjunction with Torah. But in the context of our discussion, tov is going to be compared to a tzadik. Shenemar amru tzadik ki tov. We have a pasuk that supports this idea that the word tov can be connected with a tzadik. So just for vayar elokim esa or ki tov, just for one tzadik, that would be sufficient and proper justification to create the world. Rabbi Elazar Omer, I'm sorry, Ve'amar Rabbi Elazar, Kol HaMishkach Tov Mitamudo Gorim Galus Levanav. You forget anything you learn, so it causes dispersion and exile for your children. Now, for us members of the Daf Yomi, that's of course frightening. It's unbelievable. How many Dapim of Gemara have we gone through? So, if we're proud. We're extremely proud of how many Dapim we've gone through. Actually, since the beginning of the Daf Yomi cycle, we are. Right, huh?
503.
Yeah, we just hit the 500 mark. So we did 500 dapim. How many of the 500 dapim since the beginning of the Shas do we remember? Okay, so everyone can plead the fifth on this one. But anyway, but the Gemara says, but don't forget anything you learned. I know it's very difficult. I understand we're human beings. So it's, you know, obviously the Gemara is basically telling us to try, but try. In other words, try to remember as much as you can. And the Gemara says, and if you forget something that which you learn, so you cause exile to your children. What an ironic question that I'm about to ask. What else in the Gemara did we mention causes us to forget?
A lot of things.
Yeah, correct. There are a number of things. If you can, yeah, I know. Correct. It's an ironic question. But what else causes us to forget? So the first thing that comes to my mind, there is a list. The Gemara doesn't put it all together, but in other words, out there in Shas, there's a list of things that the Gemara says don't do because you're going to forget. One of them is eating olives. Yeah, right. You remember that one? Okay. If you do good, right. But the eating olives. Gemara says, olive oil, the Gemara says, is wonderful. That helps memory. But eating straight olives, the Gemara says, no good.
And eggs.
Eggs, that's correct.
Between us, we're gonna
remember all of them. So Garim Galus Levanov Shenamar Vatishkach Torah Sokecha Ashkach Benechigamani. It's Mida Keneged Mida, meaning we forget the Torah because Baruch Hu says, fine, you know, you choose to forget me, I'll choose to forget you. Rabbi Abba Amar Maridin Oso Migdula So. Another result of forgetting your learning is that you get demoted. Shenema ki ata hadas ma'asta va'amasecha mikahein li. You no longer serve as my kohen. You get demoted. Amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, ein tzadik niftar min olam asher nivrat tzadik amoso. Tzadik needs to be replaced. So when the tzaddik dies, before he goes, the Kadosh Baruch Hu makes sure an installation of another tzaddik. Now, I know this discussion is hard to totally follow. You know, tzaddikim aren't made. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't mass produce tzaddikim. In fact, the Gemara is about to point out that there is a limited number of tzaddikim. But I mean, with the concept of bechir chafshi, one can only imagine that the tzaddik is not just simply tzaddik doesn't come into being. The tzaddik is, you know, he works on himself to becoming a tzaddik. So how to totally understand these Gemaras, I'm not the right person to talk to, but I understand. These are complicated topics of discussion. So before the sun goes down, the sun comes up. Meaning, I understand that we have a night that separates them, but in this concept, as the Gemara is presenting it, in other words, we won't lose Eli until we first have Shmuel, so that there will be a seamless transition from one tzaddik to the next tzaddik. So Kadosh Baruch Hu knew that there's going to be a limited number of tzaddikim in this world. So what did Kadosh Baruch Hu do? He distributed them throughout the generations. Kadosh Baruch Hu made pillars for the earth and set upon them the earth. Meaning the earth is supported. Supported by what? Tzaddikim. So in other words, obviously there's a physical support of the world, and you know we can understand the world in its physical sense, but metaphysically, what's holding it up? Tzaddikim. For one tzaddik, the world is going to sustain. Rabbi Chiya didei amar. Now that was Rabbi Chiya quoting Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Chiya himself says, "Amar mehacha raglei chasidav yishmor." So the pasuk says that the raglei chasidav will be protected because we need the chasidim. But the Gemara points out, yeah, but aren't you trying to make the point that even for one chasid, one tzaddik, so chasidav tuva mashmam, Rav Nachman, it's a chasidoksiv. Yeah, but that's a kriuksiv. Meaning you're right, chasidav, as we pronounced it, is in the plural, but the way it's written is in the singular. If you make it through the majority of your life without sinning, the Gemara says you're going to be guaranteed, assured, that you're not going to sin. Okay, so what does the pasuk say? That's good. It would have been better if we know that when we were young. But what does the pasuk say? That the average person lives till 70. Thank God. We seem to be, you know... We seem to be ruining the statistics of David HaMelech, but anyway, but so 77 means 36. If you make it to 36 without sinning, so shuv nechote shenamar raglei chasidav yishmor. The raglei, like the conclusion of a chasid, meaning in the literal sense, raglei means the legs of, but in the context of this discussion, it means the conclusion. So you want to make yourself impervious to sin, it's very simple. Like it's very simple. But it's very simple. What you do is, you resist the temptation the first time, you resist the temptation the second time, and that's it. It will not tempt you anymore. Again, this idea of creating a basis of rejection of sin. Very famous Gemaras that are finishing up the third parak of Yuma. So you get siyata d'shmaya, you get help, you get divine help. Meaning if you are interested in becoming a better person, so Kadosh Baruch Hu helps you. But the converse is also true. That habala tame, but at the same time, if you have an interest and you have a desire of becoming more tame, so Kadosh Baruch Hu helps you out there as well. So the Gemara says, how does this work? So not how does this work, but support for this idea. Tana de Bay Rabbi Shmuel. Mashal Adam Shaya Mocher Neft Farsamon. The Gemara says, I'll give you an example, an analogy, in terms of how we could see this play out in the world. On the very top of Lama Testament, Aleph, Balim Do Neft. Let's say your job in life is to sell fuel, gasoline. Right, kerosene, I think, is a better way of seeing it. If you have a picture of how that smells, So, and that's your job. And the world needs kerosene. The world needs gas. It's just, but that's what you're doing. So you're measuring it out. You're going to smell at the end of the day. So, Omer lo medoda talatzmacha. So anyone who's buying it says, you know what? I know you're pouring the gas right now. You're pouring the kerosene to measure it. I'll stay outside. You measure inside. You make yourself smell bad. I'll stay outside. So Afar Simon Omer lo hamtein li ad she'emdod imcha kedeshin is basem ani ve'ata. But if what you're measuring is perfume, something that smells unbelievable, so then the person says, wait a second, hold it. Don't pour, don't measure yet. Let me join you. Then you'll measure, then you'll pour. And through the pouring, both of us are going to come out smelling great. And again, in this mashal, that's the mashal. What's the nimshal? So it's the same thing regarding a person who's going to be metame himself. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, hold on 1 second. I'm walking out. Okay, you're on your own now. But as opposed to the one who's pouring the bosom in this case is the Torah and the good acts and the good deeds. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, wait, hold it, let me come in, and so Messiah. Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, Avera mitamtemes libo shel adam, and Avera blocks up the arteries. I know I have a number of cardiologists in this room, so you want cause of blockage. So the Gemara says Avera. Avera mitamtemes libo shel adam. So it causes blockage. I just can imagine you were sitting in the room together with the patient. You know. Okay, can quote today's daf. So shenamar v'lot etamu b'hem v'nit mesem b'am alti kre v'nit mesem ela v'nit mesem. To play in the world v'nit mesem. V'nit mesem literally means with the olive there, you will become tame. Now, even in the literal meaning, you're not going to become tame. Meaning by eating non-kosher food, you don't become tame. If it's an avela, yes, you will become tame. But in other words, just by eating non-kosher food in general, you're not going to become tame. But with the subtraction of the olive. And if you look in Chumash, you'll see that it's written without the aleph. So v'nit mesem from the word mitamtem, to stuff up the arteries. Tanu Rabbanan, al tetamu behem v'nit mesem b'am adam mitame atzmo ma'at mitame moso harbe. And again, a similar idea to what we just expressed. Meaning, if you cause tumah to yourself, so that generates even more tumah. I'm sorry, milamata mitame moso milamala. And where is it going to come from? So, if you're metame yourself in this world, the Kadosh Baruch Hu kind of heaps on top of it. In this world, the Kadosh Baruch Hu will be metame you in the next world. And of course, it works in the converse as well. Meaning that if you go out of your way to purify, to sanctify yourself, so Kadosh Baruch Hu heaps that on top of you as well. In the down here, Kadosh Baruch Hu adds from the top. And if you do it in this world, if you're mekadosh yourself in this world, Kadosh Baruch Hu adds more. La'olam haba hadron alach amar lahem ha'mamuna. And that is the end, the conclusion of the third perek of Yuma. Okay, we start the fourth perek, and we're going to be pretty focused in terms of what we discuss here in the fourth perek, and that is selection, and that is lottery. See, in the Mishnayos, what the last thing we saw together in the third parak, we went off on a tangent. Daf Lam Zayin, Daf Lam Ches, those were tangents. We mentioned the upgrades that were made in the Beis Hamikdash, and the reason why we got onto the tangent is because we mentioned that one of the upgrades is that the lottery box and the actual lottery tickets were originally made out of wood, and as the Gemara pointed out a number of days ago, could really be made out of any material, was made out of wood, and one of the upgrades that was made in the Beis Hamikdash is that they made it into gold. Okay. That is the... And then we spent the last 2 days going off on a tangent. But today's Daf Lamentes now starts the fourth parak. And in this fourth parak, we're going to actually go through the selection process. Now, in terms of a lottery, it's a very simple lottery. Meaning we have two goats. The Mishnahs will talk later on about this idea that the goats have to be identical to one another. They have to look the same and cost the same. And okay. And they have two goats. One goat's going to be to the right side of the Kohen Gadol, and the other one is going to be to the left side of the Kohen Gadol. And there are two tickets in the box. You have a box. The box is not big. We'll talk later on about the actual size of the box. And what the Kohen Gadol is going to do is he's going to reach his hands into the box. Into his right hand, he's going to take one lottery ticket. Now, I call it a ticket. It's not really a ticket. It's more like a block, okay, or a plaque, if you will. Okay, exactly how to picture it, I'm not totally sure. But you have your picture book. Oh, now we're talking. So it's like a block, and what the Kohen Gadol is going to do is he's going to reach his hand in, he's going to take out one, like a plaque. That's a good way to describe it. Okay, he's going to take his hand in, he's going to reach. Here, pass it around. He's going to reach in and take one, and he's going to put his left hand in, although you'll see, this is not, what I'm telling you right now is not agreed to by everybody, but I'm going to present it like the Mishnah is right now. He's going to put his left hand in, and he's going to take out the other plaque. Okay, what are written on the two plaques? On one plaque it says La Hashem, and the other plaque it says La Zazel. The whichever one goes into his right hand will identify the right goat, and whichever one is in his left hand is going to identify the left goat. And that's it. So you don't have to know much statistics. It's a 50-50. In terms of which goat is going to be a sign for which. And there is obviously an element of randomness, 50-50, and by design, meaning the selection of the goat has to be done in such a manner. I strongly encourage, I cite him often, one of my rebbeim back in the good old days when I was in yeshiva, but Rabbi Kornfeld has a nice discussion on today's daf in terms of why specifically on Yom Kippur does randomness have to play such an integral part of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. And he connects it, I'm sure a number of you have already thought this, but he connects it to Purim. In fact, the words Yom Kippurim, it's a day like Purim. Purim also another day on the Jewish calendar where randomness and lottery is an integral part of the day. And he makes a connection and he discusses it in depth. So I strongly encourage. Taraf Bikalpi. So the Mishnah over here describes now what the Kohen Gadol is going to do. And the Mishnah over here is describing him reaching into the box and taking out one of the plaques in order to determine the assignment. So the first two words of the Mishnah, the first two words of the Perek, each one of them is a hard word. Taraf Bikalpi. It's the name of the Perek. You know how the Perekim work. The name of the Perek is given by the first words of the Perek. So it's good for us to know what these two words mean. So the Kalpi is the easier word to describe. Because the Kalpi is the box. The box that holds the two plaques. What's the word taraf mean? So I'll give you a couple of suggestions. First we'll go with Rashi. Rashi says, taraf pitom betrefa uvechatifa. So the way Rashi describes it is, you're going quickly. You're reaching quickly. That's what the word taraf means, like to grab or to snatch. Right? We have the word taraf come up a number of times in Chumash. I think the first time it comes up in Chumash, but I could be wrong, is Taraf Taraf Yosef. When Yosef was torn up by the... I mean, he wasn't, but in other words, that's what Yaakov concluded. So in other words, it was done quickly, hastily. Perhaps, I think Rashi later on will indicate this as well, perhaps the reason why is so that the Kohen doesn't have a chance to feel his way around in the box. Because it's a plaque, and I don't know if the words are engraved. The pictures make it indicate that the words were engraved, but... So that he doesn't feel his way around in the box. So he picks up quickly. He grabs it quickly. Why does he really care which plaque ends up in which hand? So Rashi later on will say, yeah, he really does care. Why does he care? Because we're going to see later on this morning in today's daf that if the La Hashem plaque comes up in his right hand, it's a siman tov. It's a good sign. If the Azazel plaque comes up in his right hand, it's not a good sign. Okay, we'll talk more about that later on. So he would want the Hashem ticket to come up in his right hand. So that is Rashi's understanding of the word taraf. Taraf means you're doing it quickly. If you take a look at the side of the Gemara where he quotes the Aruch, so the Aruch says, no, you know what the word taraf means? Mix it up. Meaning scramble. Meaning put your hand in. I know it's only two plaques in there, but if you look at the Aruch, he quotes a Rashbam from Baba Basra, Taraf Irvavam, kamo Beitzim Trufot. It's a term that we see often, scrambled eggs. Beitzim Trufot. So in other words, put your hand in and scramble it around a little bit so that there will be a randomness to the selection of the two tickets. Okay, so two possible explanations of the word Taraf means. Taraf Bakapi Valashnekar Losecha Kasavalav Lashem. So one says it's Lashem. Ve'echa Kasavalav Lazazel. And the other one says Lazazel. Askan Biminovers Besav Mismolo. The configuration, which we've already seen once before in the Mishnayos, but the Mishnah here repeats, is that you have the Sgan, the deputy Kohen Gadol, to his right. You have the Rosh Beis Av to his left. Im shel shem ala b'yamino. Now, if the shame, meaning the plaque that reads La Hashem, falls out on his right hand, Sgan Omer lo, ishi Kohen Gadol hag b'yaminecha. So the Sgan Kohen Gadol, who is standing to his right, says, okay, raise your right hand. Im shel shem ala b'smala, Rosh Beis Av, Omer lo, ishi Kohen Gadol hag b'smalecha. Now, if the plaque that says Lashem falls out in his left hand, so the one standing to his left, which was the Rosh Beis Av, says to him, okay, raise your left hand. He places them on the goats, and he says, Lashem Chatas, and Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Lo Hayatzerich Lomer Chatas, Ela Lashem. No need to say Chatas, meaning we know it is a Chatas. The simple word Lashem is enough to tell us that this is the one that will be a Chatas, that will serve as a Chatas. Now he did say the word Lashem, so you know what happens in the Beis Hamikdash throughout the day of Yom Kippur when you say the word Lashem. Baruch Shem Kavod Machzol Olam Vayed. The response of everyone is Baruch Shem Kavod. Lama li tarif bekapi keiched olon nekavim b'lishkol. So the Gemara gives the explanation which we already presented in the Mishnah, the one that Rashi said, which is why grab it quickly, so he won't be mechavein lishkol, so he won't be intent on picking up the Lashem with his right hand. The box itself was made out of wood, was chol. Chol over here means not kodesh. It was not a klisharis. And the most you could put into this box was only two hands. Meaning, it was only big enough to be able to hold two hands. Okay. So three points of description given by Rava about the box. One was about its material. Two was about its status, Kodesh versus Chol. And three about was the size. So, Maskevla Ravina Bishlam in the Machzeg Alashtei Yadam Kechadol Lechavim V'Lishkol. So in terms of the size, I get it. Meaning you don't want the box to be too big, because if it's too big, it'll give the Kohen ample time to feel his way around in the box and basically try to figure out, hey, which one is this one? This is the Lashem one, this is the Zazel one. Fine. So the box is small, so that basically the only thing the Kohen could do is just stick his hand in the box and take it out. That I get. El Shechol Nikdasha. But the Gemara says, why is the box chulin? Why not make it hektish? Why not make it a klisharis? Im kein avalei klisharis shal eight. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because then what are we talking about? A wooden klisharis? We don't like wooden klisharis. The klisharis to eight, lo avdinan. We don't do that. Not in the base of Mikdash. V'navda de kesev, v'navda de zahav. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're fine. If the problem is that it's wood, so let's solve the problem. Let's make the box out of gold. Let's make the box out of silver. And then we can be mekadesh it. And the Tosfos Yerushalmi says, what's the hang-up of the Gemara right now? Meaning, why is the Gemara so intent on making this a klisharis? So it's not an avoda. In other words, we're not talking about an avoda. So why does it need to be klisharis? So the Tosfos Yerushalmi says, because it's more covered. It's just simply a more honorific way to handle the selection of the lottery if we're doing it out of klisharis.
It facilitates the avoda.
Okay, exactly. It's more covered. So v'navda d'zava torchas amamana sheYisrael. So the Gemara says, yeah, but then that's obviously more expense for us. And if we could reduce expense, the Torah says, let's do that. In other words, it's understood that's the base of Mikdash, and understood in general the base of Mikdash. We do want to look extravagant, right? The Gemara says a number of times. Ain anias b'makam ashiras. Right? We generally speaking want things in the Beis Hamikdash to look good, but if there's cost cutting that could be done, Gemara says we should engage in cost cutting. Fine. Okay, so Rava gives us three pieces of information regarding the box that holds the two tickets. One is that it's wood, and two is that it's chulin. It's not a klisharis, and three, it's only large enough to hold two hands. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Mishum Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar has gone v'kohen gadol machnis in yad b'kapi. The Gemara now is going to present a braisa which does not agree with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that the kohen gadol inserts his two hands in. So obviously that means, okay, ready for a smart statement, that it'll be one right hand and one left hand. Okay, that's correct. That is going to go into the box. Is that okay? Yeah, that's okay. But if you can imagine, however, that's a left hand going in. In the Beis HaMikdash, Right? You know the Kohen Gadol, any Kohen who is left-handed is that's a mum. That's a blemish. All avoda has to be done with the right hand. Okay? Yes, it is discriminating against the lefties. Okay? Apologies to all left-handed people. But in other words, that's just it. That's just how it works. So that means that and again, going back to a point we made just a moment ago, this is not an avoda, but that means the Kohen Gadol is going to be putting his left hand into the box. According to this Braisa, let's avoid that. How do we avoid that? By having two right hands go in. Two right hands go in? Yes. Have another Kohen involved in the selection process. So, Skan v'Kohen Gadol machnisin yadan b'kalpi. The Skan and the Kohen Gadol would both put their hands into the box. In b'yimino shel Kohen Gadol, ola Skan omer lo ishi Kohen Gadol hagbe yeminecha. Now, if the Kohen Gadol gets the shame plaque, so then the Skan says to him, good. I was going to say, you won. There's no winner, there's no loser, that's not, you know. But in other words, you got it. You got the golden ticket. So you raise your hand. However, in b'yamino shel Skan ola, but if the shame ticket ends up in the hand of the Skan, so Rosh Beisav, omer lo, the Kohen Gadol, daber milecha. So the Rosh Beis Av says to the Kohen Gadol, okay, speak. Meaning, you're obviously not going to raise your hand, but as the Skan raises his hand, you're the one who will say, that's the one L'shem. V'neim alei Skan, the Gemara says, why do we shift jobs? Meaning, if the Skan were the one who pick up the shame, he would announce. I'm sorry. Let me do that again. If the Kohen Gadol was the one who picked up the shame, the Skan would be announcing. But if the Skan picked up the shame, so then the Rosh Beis Av would announce. The Gemara says, yeah. Kevin de lo salik biyadei chal shadaita. Because now that it was the Skan who picked up the shame, that means the Kohen Gadol did not. That means the Kohen Gadol got a little bit dejected. And so now, to add insult to injury, so now it's the Skan who's going to say to the Kohen Gadol, okay, announce it. Announce the shame ticket that I picked up. That's adding insult to injury. So therefore, the Skan should be quiet. But my kamifugi, now, what's at the machlokus over here? Meaning, our Mishnah has the Kohen Gadol putting in his two hands, right and left. The Braisa that we just quoted has the Kohen Gadol inserting a right hand, and the Skan inserting a right hand. Marsav yamina deskan adif mismola de Kohen Gadol, marsav ki hadad einenu. So the Gemara says, without much explanation, it's obviously we're assigning value. Our Mishnah says better for the left hand of the Kohen than the right hand of somebody else. The Braisa says no, they're equal with one another, and being all things being equal, the right hand of a Skan is better than the left hand of a Kohen Gadol. Uman haitana depalagala de Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Chanin's gana Kohen. Now, who argues with Rabbi Yehuda? So it's funny. We already know the answer, our Mishnah, but the Gemara says, but we can also identify. Rabbi Chanin is going to Kohanim. De Tanya, we learned in the Braisa. Rabbi Chanin is going to Kohanim. Omer lama Skan miyamino. Why is this Skan to the right of the Kohen Gadol? Rashi over here offers two explanations. One explanation of Rashi is specifically here, or Rashi says no, in general, meaning he's his right-hand man. Right? That's an expression that is, as we're now learning, an old expression. She'im ira bo psul b'Kohen Gadol nechna Skan u'mishamish tachtav. So he's serving there as a relief pitcher in the event that the Kohen Gadol no longer can do the avoda.
Is he the backup Kohen?
Yes. In other words, from day one of the Masechta, that's him. So he's there right alongside. Tana Rabbanan Arba'im Shana Shesham Shimon Atzadik Haya Gora Ola B'Yamin. Okay, and now these Gemaras coming up from this point till really the end of today's daf give us a little bit of historical context for the second base of Mikdash. Okay. First of all, Shimon HaTzadik. So I think the name says it all. Okay. Good guy. Tzadik. So you remember what it says in Pirkei Avos? He was Mishayare Knesset HaGedolah. That means that in the beginning of the second base of Mikdash, so we had the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah, made up of Nevi'im. Those were the last Nevi'im historically. There were no longer Nevi'im after they included Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. Mordechai was part of the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah. Fine. And then who was the last remaining descendant, but member of the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah? Shimon HaTzadik. That's what the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says. So for the beginning of Bayit Sheni, Shimon HaTzadik, who obviously was a Kohen Gadol, we'll see him throughout the Masechta. So he served as Kohen Gadol for the first 40 years of the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay. It will become clear. He was an extraordinarily impressive human being, and good things happened to him. If we can go to the tail end of the second Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash lasted for 420 years. The last 40 years of the second Beis HaMikdash were disastrous. In other words, the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash was looming, and it was clear for those last 40 years that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed. Okay, and we'll talk about that as well. And obviously that gives us a wide middle. In other words, take out 80 years now of the 420, and so that gives us 340. So 340 of the central years of the second Beis HaMikdash. So it was like, it was in the middle. Now we already learned earlier in the Masechta, right, back to the first parak, that the Kohanim, generally speaking, didn't make it. Meaning the Kohen Gadol, I should say. Kohen Gadol usually bribed their way into the position and usually didn't last a year. And the Gemara gave us a number earlier, if I remember correctly, of 300 Kohanim who served somewhere in these middle years, in these central years. But anyway, the Gemara now is going to note that during the first 40 years of the second Beis HaMikdash, during Shimon HaTzadik, so let's see the Gemara inside, Rabbi Chinin is going to Kohanim, no, sorry, Tanu Rabbanan. Arba'im shana shesham Shimon HaTzadik, for those first 40 years that Shimon HaTzadik served in the second Beis HaMikdash, Hayu Gora Ola B'Yamin. The Gora always came up in the right hand. Siman Tov. And when I say the Gora, I mean the plaque that read La Hashem. Mikan Ve'elech, Pa'amim Olim B'Yamin, Pa'amim Olim B'Smol. After that, meaning after Shimon HaTzadik in his 40 years, so then, random. Like random is usually works. Sometimes on the right, sometimes left. Vaya Lashon Shel Zahoris Ma'abin. Now the Lashon Shel Zahoris, the red wool, which we'll talk later in the Masechta about. So it transformed from red to white. Mikan Ve'elech, that was during the first 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik. Mikan Ve'elech, Pa'amim Ma'abin, Pa'amim Eino Ma'abin. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Vaya Ner Ma'aravi Do Lake. The Ner Ma'aravi would light into the morning. The Ner Ma'aravi, the most western candle. Which one is the most western candle? So I'm looking at the clock. We're not going to go through the Rashi right now. I apologize. But there is a machlokus in the Gemara in terms of the configuration of the menorah. Based on that machlokus, there is going to be two opinions in terms of what exactly the Ner Ma'aravi is. For our purposes, let's just call it the Ner Ma'aravi. So sometimes it lit into the morning, which was a miracle, meaning there wasn't enough fuel for it to go that long. And sometimes no. I'm sorry, during the first 40 years, it always lit. And after those first 40 years, sometimes it lit, sometimes it didn't. Now, for those first 40 years, you woke up in the morning, how was the fire on the top of the Mizbeach strong? Didn't need more wood. We threw two blocks of wood on because that's a mitzvah, but it didn't need it. But mikan ve'elach pa'amim mitkaber, pa'amim mitkaber. But after those first 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik, sometimes it was good, sometimes it just needed more fuel, and okay. V'lo ayu kohanim nimnayim alavi etzim lamarach kolayim kulo. And as needed, the kohanim would bring wood onto the fire. V'nishtacha bracha be'omer v'shtei alechem. V'lechem apanim v'chol kohen shemagia kezayis yesh ochlo v'saveh v'yesh ochlo u'mosir. Now in terms of all the menachos of the tzibur, the shtei alechem, the omer, alechem upon him. So the Kohen eats a kezias, made him full. Kezias is somewhere in the ballpark of 40 grams of bread. Kohen was perfect with that. So the and sometimes he couldn't even finish it was so much. Mikan ve'elech neshachah me'era ba'omer shtei alechem, alechem upon him. But after those first 40 years of Shimon HaTzadik, so and me'era, a curse went into the bread, sometimes satiated, sometimes they're not.
The whole what did they do with the extra that left behind?
It's the right question, and it's carbon, and it's, you know, it needs to be eaten. Yeah, that is the right question. I don't know. The whole kohen magio kapul, and every kohen got a pull the size of a bean. Had snuin moshkinas yadayim. Now there was such a grab that the snuin, the more modest kohanim, realized, I'm going to fight for a piece of herring, right? Just a crumb. It's like, in other words, it's not worth it. So v'hagargar notim va'ochlim. Now those who were not modest, those Kohanim that were Gargar. It's a great word. Right? Kind of, it gives you the sense of what kind of Kohen they were just by saying the word. So, and there was a guy who grabbed, but didn't just grab his for himself, but grabbed from somebody else. Okay, that's a move. So, they called them Ben Chansan. He was a thief. Now, as Tosus points out on the where? No. Yeah. On the Amud Aleph, it's the only Tosus on the Amud. So as Tosus points out, meaning they all grabbed, but they all grabbed from the table. He grabbed from somebody else. He gets a special designation as being a thief. So, and they called him a Ben Chansam Ad Yom Oso. Right? That name stuck with him. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Shila Maikra Elokai Paltani Miad Rashami Kaf Ma'avel V'chometz. You see that the word chometz isn't used in conjunction with a thief. Rav Amar Me'acha Limdu Eitev Dershu Mishpat Ashu Chamotz. Ashu Chamotz. Make sure that you support the victim. Not the thief, the victim. Ashrei Chamotz V'alta Ashu Chometz. Tan Rabbanat Oso Shana Shemetz Ba Shimon HaTzadik. The year that Shimon HaTzadik died. Amalan B'Shana Zu Hu Meis. So he said, this is it. Meaning in the 40th year that he served as a Kohen Gadol on the base of Mikdash, he declared that to be his last year. Now that's information that we usually don't know. Amar lo minayin ata yodea. So they said to him, how do you know? So Amar lam b'chol yom ha-kippurim ha-yam izdamin li zaken echa lavush levanim v'atuf levanim nechnas imi v'yatsa imi. So usually what happens is that I'm accompanied as I go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim by a person in white. Now, how do you understand this? Meaning, nobody can go in with the Kohen Gadol. So what was this that went in with him? So stay tuned. I'll try to share. But then this year, this particular Yom Kippur. So what happened was, is that who accompanied me was wearing black, and came in with me, but didn't come out with me, and that's how I know. After Yantif, right? He was sick for 7 days. Umes. And he dies. And the Kohanim no longer blessed using Shem Hashem out of the Kohanim from that point going forward, explains Rashi, no longer use the Shem HaMeforash, the explicit name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They felt that after the death of Shimon HaTzadik, it was no longer kedai to do so. Okay, just one last point. We'll stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Who went in with him? So obviously it's not another person. I mean, that's clear. You want to say it's a malach. So even that's difficult. To look at the Tosfos Yeshanim, he says it. I'll repeat it. I'm not going to pretend like I understand. So nichlas imi v'yatsa imi b'yushami parich v'haksi v'chol adam lo yebo amoid v'dershinan afilu osum shekasov b'hem ufneim p'nei adam. Meaning no one goes into the Kohen Gadol with the Kodesh Kadashim with the Kohen Gadol, not even Malachim. So if that's true, this is the Tosfos Yeshanim quoting the Yushami. So if that's true, who went in with him? Answer, Umitaritz Kvoda Kadosh Baruch Hu Haya. So the Yushami's answer is Kvoda Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Obviously that's very powerful. It's very very hard to understand. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. We started the fourth parak. We finished the third parak of the Masechta, speaking more on the topic of and we started the fourth parak of the Masechta, and we are in the discussion of lottery, and we are going to continue tomorrow the discussion of Shimon HaTzadik in those first 40 years.